Hey there, welcome to ATLN 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We are recording on a Saturday evening, two nights after the Hawks season ended at the hands of the Boston Celtics. Glenn, are you ready for the 2023-24 season to start yet?
No, man, I need a break. It's funny. The second round of the playoffs is when I typically start to dig into the draft class. And, you know, I get, you know, a good to see what the draft is about 7 weeks out now, maybe eight, somewhere in that range, right? So, I get top 40 guys or so. I'll have a kind of a list and things like that. And, but I'm not ready. I need a few more days before I can even kind of get to that. And I didn't have to cover a 9 o'clock exit interview like you did. So you know, if I'm feeling that way, you must feel like you needed even more time than me to before you move on to the next task, whatever that might be.
Yeah, a 9 o'clock exit interview isn't that bad if it ends at noon, but we started at 9 and ended at like 3:30.
Casual,
yes, casual. Well, they treated us to some Chick-fil-A breakfast biscuits, so at least we had that going for us.
Yeah, there you go.
Landry Fields didn't sound all that positive about John Collins when he was asked about that on exit interviews.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he kind of played both sides with his answer, I guess, which is notable because most organizations are careful to kind of keep it more one-sided and, you know, talk about value and loyalty and appreciation and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see kind of what they do. I already have people, you know, asking me questions like, what free agency have your eyes on? I'm not really ready to kind of get into that yet. Who do you expect to be traded and not traded? I kind of touched on that a little bit today with one of my threads, and that if they're aiming to build out shooting and defense, the Hunter's probably the least likely guy to get traded. So I've touched on that one. But, you know, for me, I want to talk about the series, kind of do a look back at the series. I want to talk about Media Day. Exit Media Day. I'm already fast-forwarding us to September. Exit interviews and what you learned, what we learned there. But for me, it's like, this offseason, are they pursuing kind of the primary focus of being roster construction and fit, right? Which we've talked about, Sadiq Bey is already kind of one nice step forward towards some of the things that they need for a full season next year that they didn't have this year. Or when they look at their trade opportunities, is it more of how can we generate value? And where fit is value the higher priority and fit is a secondary priority? Or is fit the higher priority and value is a secondary priority? I don't know what to expect because I don't really kind of know how they're viewing those two dynamics around this postseason. So I'm kind of trying to figure out what I think they should be thinking. I think for where they are now, I think if they were a little higher in the pecking order of the NBA, I think fit would probably make sense as a really, you know, high priority. When you're close, you're looking for fit, right? And I think they're closer than their record suggests, but I don't think that they're so close that they should be putting fit above value, I think is where I have it right now. I think value is the higher priority, but other people might have other views. Curious what you think about that.
I mean, that sounds about right. Like the closer you are to the top, you worry about fit. And if not, then you you just worry about value. That sounds like exactly it.
I did better with that than I did with my tweet today with the stats and everything, which I had to redo a couple times. So,
I have a question for you.
Yeah,
it kind of fits. You know, you just mentioned his name a second ago. Is Sadiq Bey fixable on defense? I'm concerned after that playoff series.
Well, so I. Fixable is not the word I would fixate on, not to be, no pun intended there. For me, first of all, I'm not going to judge a guy by whether or not he can handle Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum is one of the top scorers in the league, and you know, and sure, he's not the, we talked about it, not the first, not the most dynamic kind of first step guy, but lots of craft and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And he knows how to make the Boston spacing really, really work for him. For me, the when I think about Sadiq, he gives you so much juice on offense as a shooter, as a guy who will attack closeouts, as a guy who will be physical, get to the free throw line, drive, et cetera. My question on defense is he workable? Can you make him work? Like, can you come up with a plan for him? And within his, the plan for him being part of the broader plan to make it work. And for me, a few things. One is, if the idea is that he's going to take the other team's best guy, okay, that, yeah, that, that's not the right plan for sure. Right. Right? Sure. Even if it's a lesser guy than Tatum. Right. But for me, it's, it starts with his toughness and his willingness to be physical. That's something you can work with in my mind. Right. In fact, that allows him to play up depending upon matchup to the floor sometimes, right? He'll fight for right. rebounding position, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the next thing is, will he, I don't see any reason he can't be helped to improve as a team defender and as the help defender. And he showed, I thought, some flashes of some of that before, you know, as the kind of the, as the playoffs went along here and there. When he was on ball in space, it was as bad as it could get. In fact, the last time you recorded, we talked about the fact that Quinn basically decided to stop doing that, right? And in game five, anyway, we saw a little bit of it in game six. There was really kind of not as as much opportunity to do something else there. But for me, it's like, if the, if he's willing to work as a team defender, if he's willing to work as a help defender, if he's willing to help rebound, if he's willing to be physical with guys that are bigger than him, I think there's enough to work with there that you can take advantage of the offensive juice he gets you. But it, it takes him committing to wanting to be a good team defender, wanting to be a good help defender, wanting to use his physicality to generate value in a way that a lot of times we don't think of as the first thing we think of a wing defender. That's my view.
Yeah, I'm, I mean, I guess part of the reason I'm concerned is, I guess there's a few things. For one, it's like, you know, I use the word fixable, you use the word workable. But I just think about these situations and it's like, okay, well, you know, does it work when he's just guarding somebody one-on-one in space? And it's like, okay, no, that, that doesn't work. And it's like, okay, does it work when he's sort of in a two-man action and he's, you know, got to do that dance? And it's, I'm not super comfortable with that either.
Yep.
And then also, you know, there's a lot of times where it's like, wait, what just went wrong on that play? And then you, you play it back and it's like, oh, okay, who was the helper there? Oh, it was supposed to be Sadiq Bey, and just, you know, kind of a swing and a miss on the help defense. And I'm trying, like, I believe in his defensive rebounding. I believe in sort of his toughness, but, you know, you, when I break it down sort of scenario by scenario, it's like, he's not good in any of the scenarios. And you look at the numbers from the playoff series and my God, they're awful.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like the overall Hawks defensive rating was 118.8. When Sadiq Bey was on, and granted, he's sort of a small ball four, so you're juicing the offense and subtracting from the defense, but it was 129.4 with him on. And like I said, you know, there's different things that go into that. Part of it is, you know, they tried him as the DeAndre Hunter substitute for when they just needed to get DeAndre a couple of minutes of rest while Jason Tatum was still on. And so you, those were destined to fail. Like, I don't think anybody thought of that as like a great thing that was going to happen if it happened. But okay, so that's a drag on his numbers. But like, you know, he's playing 22 out of 48 minutes a game, and you know, to be basically a 130 with a defensive rating when the overall team ratings for the team and for literally every other individual player is way under that, yeah, is really, really concerning.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a lot to fix, a lot to work on. My view is, and again, I don't want to sound like, oh, sure, this is going to be easy, or, oh, sure, it's for sure going to happen. No, I don't think either of those things. I think he has kind of the raw traits that can be developed into a useful enough and workable enough defender that his offense works. But it's going to take commitment. Like, I love that you brought up the two-man action, too, because his technique in trying to like deal with the ball screen, whether mm-hmm. it's a show and clear, a straight up switch, yep, a read based switch or not switch, was atrocious Absolutely.
I think that's the most workable part, workable, fixable. Like, I think that's the technique. You know, if he spends an off season with Quinn's guys who are focused on, you know, he's got all these people that he brought in, they're focused on sort of, you know, footwork and just sort of the dance of the defense and where you're supposed to be pushing off and leveraging. And, you know, if that comes to fruition like that, I think that's sort of the one where he can get caught up to speed quicker than the others.
Yep. Yeah. And then, and for me, like, I guess this kind of is my coaching lens I use a decent bit is he shows enough effort in enough phases that I want to believe he can have that effort show up in the areas that matter in some ways more than where he's showing some effort now. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, if he were a guy that were kind of, you know, in second or third gear, like all the time, I would be like, man, I don't know if I believe he really wants to commit to doing what's needed from him on deep, but there are areas like when he drives the ball, he works really, really hard. He's really physical, offensive glass, defensive glass, positioning,
50-50 balls.
Exactly. And so that makes me want to believe that that effort can show up elsewhere. If he can just be, you know, come up with a technique that works for him. If he can kind of come up with a plan, you know, Boston again stresses you so much that there was no room for Quinn and his staff to kind of have a little space and time to develop incrementally a plan that they, you know, it was like certainly on the fly. So I want to be optimistic, but I think mostly it's in his control, you know, as to whether he wants to really throw himself into those areas, you know, and I don't want to jump forward to the extension window and all that sort of stuff. I think it's unlikely the Hawks even want to. Well, you know, I shouldn't say that because it wouldn't impact their cap sheet next year. But I if I'm them, I want to kind of see what he shows defensively for a whole season before I kind of get into that next contract and thinking about what I want it to be. But like I said, the thing for me is that, you know, on offense, he bought into his role. He worked hard, you know, getting to the right spot, sprinting to the corner in transition and in secondary transition. It was engaged, it connected as a team. And if he can kind of transfer a lot of those qualities to defense and have his effort show up in the right areas, I believe he can be a workable enough defender.
Okay. Something that I was feeling throughout the course of game six, and then at the end of game six, when I sort of looked at the stat sheets, like trying to figure it out, is like, why didn't they use Bogey more? He ended up playing 19 minutes and change. Like, that seemed suboptimal. I know there were some moments where he was guarding Malcolm Brogdon and some other people in space, and it didn't go well. But I thought they needed more Bogey in game six. Was there something that looked like it might have precipitated while, you know, he needed to be pulled?
No, the way it felt to me was that Quinn was kind of tinkering and trying, like, okay, Bay for a few minutes, the Bogey for a few minutes. And he kind of went back and forth in the second half a few times there. And just, you know, to see, like, Bay had a nice first half, right? He had a really good first half. And, you know, I think he was just trying to figure out which one has rhythm, which one can kind of get something going on offense that's going to be helpful. It was kind of going back and forth. I think it was also a little bit based upon when Tatum was resting as well. You know, Quinn basically mirrored Hunter's minutes to Tatum, which makes it a little harder to get Bay on, especially with DeJounte being back in the game. And so I just thought with needing Hunter on, Trey and DeJounte playing, it was hard to put Bay and Bogey on together. First half went well, you know, even when both were on. Mm-hmm. The second half, I think Quinn was trying to figure out which one kind of has the most to offer right now, and just went back and forth. That's what I thought was going on.
Okay. Do you have other things from game six that you want to talk about? And, you know,
I mean, for me, it's like, you know, there were two good JC games in the series. Like, how much does that change anything, if at all? Should it change anything? The larger sample should be the prevailing thing that you're working from, I think, right? But But to me, for JC to kind of unlock himself in a really tough playoff environment, tough playoff context, you know, I think that's a feedback loop individually for him that could be helpful, you know. But that's just an interesting thing to me. I don't know that it kind of changes any kind of evaluation or calculation, but he broke through in a really, really tough playoff environment, right? Uh-huh. And contributed offensively, got more comfortable, you know, kind of found his spots in his rhythm. And he was the one player by like game five, game six, it felt like he knew this is the spot they're going to give me. This is when they're going to chase me off the line. This is when I have a chance to kind of more attack with a straight line dribble. And he kind of had them measured by, I don't know, first half of game five or so, right? And to me, that's interesting. And I think that's something that could be easily missed and easily lost. And again, I don't think that means like, oh no, like, you know, JC's a different player than he was the other 80-ish games he played, you know, this year or whatever. But I found that interesting. And to me, I think it's still fascinating to me that the last four games, Trey offensively, no, he not the most sophisticated shooting, but they're playing the second best defense in the league for regular season net rate or defensive rating. And for Quinn and Trey to kind of figure out how to get Trey unlocked, I thought that was, you know, really, really significant as well. But for me, I think the biggest takeaway from the whole series is they're capable of playing at that level. They are this team, even in its current construct, even with the limitations they have, ball handling, passing wise, you know, at positions, you know, forward and center positions overall, they're capable of playing at a pretty high level. So I don't, for me, I'm not looking for this like massive reconstruction. I'm looking, am I thinking of like a pretty significant rework of the roster? Is it more of an optimization, or is their playing going to be kind of halfway in between a pretty significant rework and optimization? And I'm still kind of trying to get my head around kind of what I think their approach is going to be. But I think this playoff series and how competitive they were able to be against such a good team is indicative that, you know, this was nothing like any of the matchups to me they faced 2 years ago, you know, going to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. This is a team that handled the playoffs differently. How much of that is Quinn? I don't know. You know, how much of that is, you know, getting a guy like Bay that like was a breath of fresh air, kind of creating some extra spacing and all of that. But I just think that I come away from this series feeling more encouraged about their current state and feeling like they're closer than your average 500 team. That's my general kind of thing I'm walking away with. How are you feeling about them coming off of the series?
Yeah, I mean, that's about where I am too. I sort of, you know, dabbling in the other playoff series. As I watch these other games across the league, it's like, I feel like Celtics Hawks was some high level basketball.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at some of the other series and I, you know, I don't know that there have been great basketball. I didn't get to see much of Knicks Cavs. I suspect from what the Cavs did there, it wasn't necessarily high level, at least on their end. No. But you know, watching some of the other series, you know, Lakers and Grizzlies and Kings and Warriors, and I don't know, even tonight with some of the Suns and Nuggets, it's like, okay, this is a pretty good game, but I thought it was really high level basketball, and I would definitely be encouraged as well. I think it was, you know, some very good stuff. One thing that I've sort of been intrigued to look at is I've been kind of curious about, okay, what were the sorts of teams that knocked Quinn out of the playoffs when he was in Utah? And, you know, a lot of it was the smaller teams. The one big team that seemed to beat them was the Rockets teams that had Clint Capella playing well. But in a lot of the other cases, you know, some Warriors and some Clippers, you know, it's some teams that had more perimeter players and more of the floor spread, and you know, the Warriors, of course, doing what they do. So right. I think it's also an interesting matchup just to see Quinn in that environment, because I'm not sure that that's what he's been most comfortable with over the course of his career either.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you love to have some truth here when they ask him how much he enjoyed being married to Rudy Gobert, you know, in the postseason. Rudy is awesome. Like, Rudy's been an absolutely awesome defender, no doubt about it. But when you're going up against, you know, trying to play seven games against the Warriors, and even those Clippers teams with, you know, Chris Paul, you know, dynamic pick and roll guy, and, you know, J.J. Redick spacing the floor as well as anyone during that time, and et cetera, et cetera. It's tough, you know, that's really tough. And so I wish I could sit down and say, hey, you know, Quinn, you had all that run with Rudy in Utah. Now you're looking at a Clint or Onyeka or a combination of the two. You know, how are you feeling? Like, what's, you know, what's kind of different? Feeling better? Feeling different? Does it just feel different? Or kind of, you know, how are you feeling about that? I'd love to know kind of his answer to that.
Yeah, that's true. If you're watching the visual of me, I'm just trying to blot out some background sound.
No worries.
Trying to make sure that I'm not getting extra feedback. So if it looks like I'm building a pillow for it, it's just a sound barrier.
Okay. But guys, I know you're physically okay there and mentally. You know,
I'm not trying to bury myself. I promise. I'm not trying to bury myself alive.
Okay. Good to know. We'll just let our listeners imagine all that. But yeah, but for me, like, so one last thing on what do we take away from this series, and maybe we could talk about, you know, exit interviews and things like that. It's a Hawks fan that's listening to this, and it's like, okay, yeah, Boston drew out a really competitive effort, a really competitive performance from them. I remember enough games against non-competitive teams this year where they were flat and did not play like that. It has to stop being about the opponent. It has to stop being about, can this good opponent draw out this level of energy and competitiveness where a random Tuesday night against a team that's going to win 25 games or whatever, we come out and try to play 5% better than them. That has to stop. They have to get past that. That's a trend that's been too present over the last whatever years. And I just want to, I feel like I wouldn't be representing some of the biggest concern across the collective mindset of fans if it weren't about that playing up and down to competition. That's something they have to break out of. And so we can feel like, oh, this team can compete, you know, reasonably with teams at the level Boston's at right now. But we also have to say they've had a real issue of only showing that when the opponent has been kind of at that level. They've got to be more consistent. They have to, you know, play to a higher standard of their own and not let the opponent kind of dictate what they bring, or else they're never going to get into kind of 50-win territory. You know, that's just something that has to be touched on. So I wanted to kind of acknowledge kind of that narrative that I think is super fair from fan bases about this team drives us crazy, losing to Charlotte in the same week as we beat, you know, a really good team like a Cleveland, you know, or whoever else, you know, 50-win team, we go to the buzzer or we win that game. And then I guess it seems it's going to 20 games, we go into overtime and lose or whatever, you know. That's something they got to get over, that regardless of changes to the roster or whatever, that part of their trend, that they got to fix that.
Okay. Did you want to talk about exit interviews, or did you want to talk about your research that you were putting on Twitter today? Or?
Yeah. Well, let's set on that. So I laid out kind of math across the last season LP was there, and that was obviously the season that they switched to Nate, and then Nate's one full season in this season. There's a lot to view there. First of all, the pick and roll suffered this year. Trey's efficiency stats suffered this year. And then what I tried to really kind of draw everyone's attention to is that not this season, but the prior season, they're basically second in efficiency in spot up opportunities. And they were like that close to being first. This year they were 29th and they were that close to being 30th. Like, they basically went from best to worst. And I think that is like the one massive thing that changed. And I touched on it in my tweet where I said they lost Gallo. You know, one of the, in my mind, maybe the best shooter at the 4 and 5. in the league. You know, you will have an argument over like Brook Lopez or other guys that, you know, at those positions or whatever, you know. But for me, like I've talked about his efficiency, his release point, you can't get to it, you know, all that sort of stuff. I think he's right up there as one of the best. JC's shooting falling off. Hunter went from like more like 38 to 35%. Jalen played a lot, which I'm thrilled about, and I'm super excited about Jalen's future. But, you know, that you kind of replace some of Gallo's shots with some of JC's 29%, some of Jalen's whatever percent. And then DeJounte's, you know, not a three-point shooter either, you know, because so you kind of embrace some of DeJounte's mid-range and, you know, some of kind of what he can do, which can be really, really helpful. And was in this series up until he got suspended. He really carried them for important stretches in the Boston series. And so for me, it's like, did Trey get worse? No, Trey didn't get worse. There's no spacing. I mean, it all basically disappeared. And the stats show that. And I think during the season, watching game to game to game, I didn't have a large enough appreciation for how dominant of a factor that was on what Trey had going on. The first half of the year, you know, with Nate there, we saw him a lot of ISO. We were like, oh, man, he's really inefficient in ISO. And he was, like, late shot clock ISO, terrible, him and DJ, right? Dealing with switches, you know, a lot of switches, but gets the pick roll. Oh, he's struggling to figure out what to do. And I think that game to game to game, I would kind of look at what he's doing, actions he was getting into, situations he was putting himself into or finding himself in, and not having an appreciation. And once I kind of pulled back just in the last 48 hours, I was like, that's got to be like 80 to 90% of us. Just there's not enough shooting around him. That's why he didn't have space. That's why he struggled. That's why his efficiency fell off. And we saw in the series, he's dynamic. He's great. Got to get that shooting back out there. That's my, you know, that's got to be like, whether we're talking about a rework or an optimization from a roster standpoint or a fit or a value, whatever, like higher than all of those considerations that on that level has got to be getting the spacing back where he wants it. And then again, CPA is a great first step, but there's more to do, I think, to get the situation right for Trey. If you're building around Trey, you got to be top three offense. And then you're trying to see how high you can get your defense. I still think that's true. You know, and if you send out a bunch of Kevin Herter shooting, Gallo shooting, and don't replace that, and then you have some regression, you know, with the guys that you're bringing back, what was Trey supposed to do this year?
Right. I mean, and you know, to rehash that list that you just went down, like, I don't think that Hunter really regressed. I think the spacing affected him too. Like, I think Agreed. He's still the same shooter. Like, you know, with Jalen Johnson, like, he made strides, but his strides were to go from a 25% shooter while wide open to a 35% shooter while wide open. They're still not guarding him. They're saying, take whatever you want, big fella. And he's getting to the point where he can make, you know, one out of three when he gets those stone cold wide open threes.
And the other one for Jalen is to go from, I'm terrified to take this shot unless there's like 5 seconds or left on the shot clock, to I'm no longer terrified to take this shot. In fact, against Boston, I got to take this shot. That, statistics aside, that's huge growth, right? So I think that's the context. I mean, I think it's so important to put out there right now and to pin that for this offseason is that for Hawks fans to be like, we're going to read about Trey wants to get traded. Trey's not an all NBA player. Trey's not an all-star. Trey, you know, is not as good as he. It's all, you know, I don't want to just kind of put all of that writing that might come from the national media or from wherever to the same category, but I kind of want to do that and be like, no, you know, that's just not what happened here. Can Trey get better? Yeah. You know, are there things for Trey to learn coming from the season? Yeah. But Trey is phenomenal. Right. And I know that Trey is not the kind of person to say, oh, none of this is my responsibility. Trey takes responsibility for his performance.
Right.
You know, he does that all the time, even in front of the media, after games, after losses, after tough performances and things like that. But this was about them sending shooting out, not bringing shooting back, having a regression from the guys they brought back, and then promoting into higher playing time in the rotation from guys that started the season out, especially not being guys that really wanted to take three-point shots. They got to fix all of that, right? If DJ is a long-term kind of partner of Trey, they've got to find shooting at the three and the four and probably some shooting at the five. You know, and figure that out. It's probably not all going to happen this year. So Trey's awesome. I'm not going to hear anything differently. If there's people who want to provide analysis of where he wasn't as good, yeah, sure, like that analysis. But this whole idea of like Trey's not as good as this point, I don't even want to get into the list of names. This point guard, this point guard, this point guard, or whatever. Trey's about as good as the gets point guard. So then that's where I am, and I'm glad I took a little time today, even though I flubbed my table I was putting out there while I was trying to keep an eye on, you know, 6 5-day-old kittens and had my nieces for a couple hours. I finally got it right, but man, going from basically best to worst spot up shooting, team building around Trae Young is a really bad development, and that's where their season went.
Yeah, I very much agree. I don't know that I had any huge takeaways from exit interviews. I'm trying to think, like, they were, you know, from a news perspective, maybe there were 4 or 5 things that were noteworthy. In my opinion, 2 from Bogey. You know, one that he feels very healthy. Like he's just like, I'm healthy. By the end of the season, I was lifting and I really wasn't thinking or worrying about it. I was just doing my regular routine, and that's certainly super positive going into you know, his new contract, his new deal. Like that's big. If they have a healthy Bogey, that could make all the difference. And, you know, the other one for Bogey is he's going to play for Team Serbia, which was probably a given if he was healthy. But, you know, he confirmed as much that that's something that he's looking forward to. So that's coming. I neglected to ask Veet if he was going to play, because I knew that the Czech Republic wasn't in the FIBA World Cup, but I didn't know if there were other events. So I didn't want to offend him, like ask the question, him being like, no, we don't have anything that we get to play this summer. And I think they do get like Olympic qualification. So I don't know if Veet's going to play or not. And nobody asked him that. So we collectively, me especially, missed on asking about that. We already mentioned that Landry, you know, didn't give the hugest, most ringing endorsement for John Collins. And so we'll see what happens there. What else was newsworthy? Oh, Trey said that he was looking to hopefully play for Team USA this summer. So, you know, they haven't made their roster yet, but he put it out there that he's looking to hopefully do that. That would be an interesting development. Mm-hmm. You know, he's at a point in his career where I think that would be a huge development, you know, just to play with that much talent, to play in a new scenario, to hear from a new coach, to have the high stakes. If Team USA can get deep in the FIBA World Cup, so that would be really interesting if he could be in that.
Yeah, and be, it would be fun for Hawks fans too. Like,
oh, of course, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think there was one more, and now I'm forgetting what it was.
Hunter said he's feeling good too, right?
I mean, every you know. Yeah, I think so. I think everybody that asked answered in the affirmative. So I think he was in that list as well.
Yeah. And then the other news to touch on is I think it was Zach Klein mentioned that basically Quinn's going to redevelop his whole staff, right? Right. So that's, I guess, not shocking, but because there was some pretty good chemistry, like when the two games Printy coached and stuff. But not shocking. Like Quinn, most NBA coaches want guys who knows what the head coach wants and knows right. what the plan is and knows the system and all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, like, is it a bunch of guys he had in Utah, you know, or is it, you know, I don't know what's that mix. So I imagine we won't start seeing like a full roster until like the whole actual NBA season ends, because, you know, in a lot of cases, they wait to see whether changes might be coming, you know, and things like that. So, but that was noteworthy. That sounds like, you know, I don't know if anyone on the staff is going to be back. Potentially, no.
Right. And, you know, there are some of the Utah staff that was with around Quinn in Utah, you know, that Utah said they weren't bringing back or whatnot. I forget exactly how it was phrased. So those are some potential candidates. Yep. And that may be the reason why they didn't re-up in Utah. Maybe they knew. With the time and the way it was, I'm sure they weren't going to announce it before, you know, Quinn and the Hawks made a move from their staff to the openings. You're not going to hire somebody for a job that already has a person in it. But we'll have to see if that's coming or not.
7 weeks of the draft. I got work to do around that. Just so everyone knows, my goal is the day before the draft to put out roughly a top 40 and what my preferences are. If anyone pays more attention to that than they do of the guys who do this full time year round, I don't know why you do that, but I just kind of go on record with my observation. I'm not a draft expert. I'll spend, I don't know, 7 weeks, 100 hours probably on it. It's probably what I'll spend on it. So I, you know, a decent effort, but not like what, you know, Sam, you know, not what the, we all know who the guys who do this year round that are really, really good, you know? So paid, you know, really, really digging on those guys, but you know, you and I'll have a podcast, what, 3 or 4 days before the draft where I like, these are the 3 or 4 guys I really, really, I'm focusing on. And it'll be fun, but I got work to do between now and then. So let's have some fun on Twitter. Let's talk about ideas and things like that. Not get too crazy. But yeah, this is the time to catch our breath, have a little bit of fun, relax, enjoy the rest of the playoffs. If we enjoy the playoffs as it goes on, that draft will be here for now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the draft. I don't think I dig as deeply in the weeds as you do. And I don't proclaim myself an expert, but I feel good about the guys that I fall in love with, though.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've got a good track record on some of those. Like Isaiah Joe. Man, I wanted Isaiah Joe so badly. Make it work. Get him here. It'll work. I promise.
We're both into Bruno.
I'm still into Bruno. I want to see this man get his shot.
All right. So we got a lot of fun. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. Oh, wait. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Bob. Thanks, Kevin.